Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. It's Progressive News Network time.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will beat them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why. Better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Well, that's right, we do see, and that's why we're here. There is a better world to come, and friends, and it's because people like you every day are doing the work that will make this a better world. You're not sitting there, you're not coasting, you didn't kick back, you're not sitting out in the porch drinking a cool and letting everybody else do the work. You are the ones that are doing the work. You are the ones that care about your neighbors, that care about the poor, that care about the environment, to care enough to get up off it and to do that next thing. Not the one thing, not the five things, not that short list, but you're there to do the work, and I thank you for it. Listen, I want to tell you, we've got some real good guests tonight. We've got Jack Braden, lifelong activist, Quaker, man of peace, alternate energy person. A real fantastic guy, a guy you need to know about, a guy who's working every day to make this a better world. And then we've also got State Representative Mark Pafford, who is doing the work. He's sitting there. He is in Tallahassee. He is doing the work to make this government do something for us, not just for big business. And he's going to tell us a little bit about his bill right now. To pry nuclear power's fingers from around the state budget and to crank it out of your pockets, because the state legislature, as I'm sure you know, said, hey, nuclear power industry, if you want to take money in advance from Florida's electric consumers, no problem. Hey, whether you build a nuclear plant or not, it's no problem. You just feel free to dive right in, take all you need, no problem. And of course, oh my God, the PSC, the Public Service Commission, they were looking out for you. But enough of that baloney. We'll hear the good stuff from Mark. And before we go any further, I want to tell you something really good. I want to tell you something so neat, it's going to bring a big smile to your face. I don't know if many of you caught it, but Link TV was playing an interview, a speech Michael Moore gave. And he made a point that I think too many of us forget. He says, you know, well, when it came back to the Vietnam War, when it came back to the glorious battle for Panama and the glorious invasion of Grenada, you know, it took some time for people to catch on to what was really going on. And even though progressives told them in advance, they said Vietnam was a bad idea. They said Gulf 1, Gulf 2, bad idea. Fighting Noriega, our man in Panama, laundering all those drug monies for us. That this was all balagna. And, you know, they did eventually. They came around. You know, they finally caught on to Nixon, and some of them caught on to Reagan, and some of them even caught on to George Bush. My God. But the thing that he was saying in this little speech, which the thing that I think is going to really bring a smile to your face, is, you know what? This whole Occupy thing, they're with us. It is not an uphill battle on this one. This one, they're with us. We don't have to convince them. They can see the inequality every day. They see it on that little tiny paycheck that hasn't changed in 30 years. They see it on the gas pump, which changes by the second. Where oil prices only go up, they never go down. Where the terror of the alert week, the terror of the day, they at least forgot about all those color changes. Oh, God, what color is terror today? But no. No, friends, they are with us on this one. And the trick on this one, we don't have to convince them. We just have to get them moving. because they are with us. And that was the point that Michael was making. He said, you know what? We don't have to convince them on this one. It's not an uphill struggle convincing them on this one. They know, and they are with us. I also want to mention some other people that are with us. Our good friend Gwen Holden Berry, who does her show, Here Be Monsters. Make sure you check out her show. It's on Sundays, the hour before ours. We've also got Anita Stewart, who does a wonderful show out on the West Coast. She sometimes guests with Gwen. Our good friend Amy Tidd from the Melbourne area. Our good friend Susan Nylon, who does a show out of Sarasota. Brian Stetton, who does a show Monday night and Friday night. And, of course, our friend, the Left Neck Chick. So make sure you're tuning to those shows. On behalf of myself and my good friend, the co-producer, Mickey Royce, I want to welcome you once again to our show. And I think we've got our first guest. Ladies and gentlemen, am I happy to announce Mr. Jack Braden.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
Pretty darn good, buddy. Pretty darn good. You know what? The revolution may not be televised, but it sure is on internet radio.
Whoa, that's for sure.
Jack, what's new, buddy? What you been up to?
Well, what do you want to talk about? I mean, we've been can give you a report on the UN, can give you a report on what is and isn't working for Democrats. I can give you a report on. I can give you a report on.
Yet?
What?
I said that spinal transplant take yet?
Just about. Yeah.
Well, tell you what, let's start with the UN because we all know that. We've got that horrible situation over in Syria, which, of course, former candidate, the good senator from Arizona, is just raring to go, man. He's just really ready to go over there and start bombing somebody. He's got friends in the weapons industry who have bombs to sell. So, on the other hand, Kofi Annan's trying to make some peace happen. Tell us, what's new on your perspective on the UN, sir?
Well, I just wanted to report that the UN has been baked in a cake since Bonn, and if your readers, your viewers, your listeners know who Achim Steiner is, he was the head of the IUCN in the International Union of Conservation, whatever it is, in Geneva, and he sort of co-opted the United Nations Environmental Project, but unfortunately he sold out to the Marrakesh crowd, which is the business as usual boys who are paying for most of the venues that are going on there. So it really nothing's going to happen. Just more incrementalism, more large conversations, basically about nothing at all.
A study. We need a study.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We need a study so that we can watch the Earth turn into a desert. I mean, that seems to be the watchword. Nobody in this country takes this problem, politically speaking, as seriously as it needs to be taken. I mean, the president jawbones about it, but if you're going to talk about clean energy, you're out of your mind. There's no such thing as clean energy. Coal certainly will never be clean. Nuclear is ridiculous. Just take a look at the industry is fleeing Japan. They're building factories all over the world because they know they're not going to be back in that prefecture for probably 1,000 years.
I understand the locals aren't very thrilled.
You got cesium everywhere. No, they're not very thrilled. They're not very thrilled at all. And God bless them. I feel, they took the brunt of those guys you were talking about earlier.
Yep.
In the Second World War. And, that whole problem still exists for them. The big and interesting news, and I can't tell you exactly which company it is because it's proprietary, but the Japanese put on the fast track a almost $600 million offshore wind project in the ocean, and they're going to use a floating pontoon-type wind-based system. And that
seems to make sense.
Finished. Exactly, because, they're going to be out in 900,000 feet of water, so you're not going to be able to stick any pylons into the earth at that kind of depth that's meaningless or sensible. So I've seen some of the projects. They look pretty interesting. They're large barges, some of them with multiple windmills, some of them with just single units to it. I don't know exactly what the design parameters that have been fully decided on, but they tell us it should be finished by 2015, 2016. So That's a really good story, and a story I'm sure that we'll hear a lot about in the UN. But in terms of the UN getting its act together over the real issues that confront humanity, that's not going to happen here. It's just simply going to be kicking the can down the road in a deference paid to the fossil industry. And that's the major problem. The Commodities Modernization Acts, which are screwing everybody in the world since, unfortunately, Bubba signed them into office before he left office in January of 2001. He signed that stuff, and I suspect he did it under duress because of his loose zipper problem in his administration. That has hamstrung any efforts to keep real inflation under control. I mean, you've got an oil price today that is $70, if not $80 high. Oil should be under $30 a barrel. They still land a barrel of oil in the Gulf of, in Saudi Arabia for $4 a barrel in the tanker cost to the Saudis. So you tell me where the justification for the price of oil over $20 is. It doesn't exist.
No. Well, it sure is speculation.
We've been yelling and screaming at Obama about the speculation. He's been working around the margins with Dodd-Frank, and that, and it's foolish. It's a foolish way in which to proceed for the wealthy, what was the wealthiest nation, and we thought the most modern nation on this planet, but it turns out it's not. Probably Kenya is more modern than the United States when it comes to understanding the energy problem and doing something about it.
I saw a really wonderful show, the TED Project, where a young man literally worried about his village in Africa, wondering what the heck they were going to do, actually went to a library, got books out, built a windmill design, and is powering his village with the windmill that he built using all salvaged parts. It was really cool.
Right. One of the greatest stories that UNEP had, because their office, United Nations Environmental Projects office, is in Nairobi. That's where the head office is for UNEP. Their original brochure showed Maasai Bushmen going into the bush with solar panels on their back, one at a time.
No kidding.
Walking to their village. Yeah, I mean, it just makes your heart, it just makes you cry when you see it with joy. I mean, there they are, and they understand conservation. They've lived conservation and efficiency their entire lives.
When you're subsistence living, conservation is the normal way of life.
It's the key. And to think that we're not in subsistence living in this country is a fallacy.
Yeah.
This is the very end of the days of not having to worry about food, clothing, and shelter. That's going to hit a lot of America right in the face over the next decade or the next score of years, when we end up with desertification, cities we can't live in, places we can't go back to because they're flooded or they're deserts or there's no water. Largest fear of all is no water. And then you look at India and you look at the Ganges, and if those glaciers that feed the Ganges are, they're just drying up at a record rate year after year after year. There'll be no water in India in the Ganges in 20 years if it continues, if we don't do something.
I hadn't heard that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
the Chinese are well aware of it. I mean, they in the United Nations, the Chinese kind of take a back seat and listen. But I mean, they're using solar as foreign aid. They're so far ahead of us in terms of their thinking about how you deal with this coming century. You can't deal with it in the, make it, box it, ship it, hope to get paid for it attitude. This growth, sustainable development, which is an oxymoron that we've been living with. We need resilient infrastructure in this country. We need to build resilient infrastructure now. And it's not clean coal, and it's not nukes, and it's not natural gas. Yes.
Jack, my co-producer, Mickey, just made a good point. She said, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got on this track? Because you are such an interesting individual with so many important things going on. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell people how you got to where you are today.
Well, in the 1960s, the late 1960s through 1975, a small venture company that I worked with ended up with three patents on vertical axis, not horizontal axis windmills, but vertical axis windmills, where we were keeping the power coefficient on a mechanical chemical basis. We were using a chemical compound to produce heat from the friction and agitation of the wind. And that's as far as I'll go into what that was about. But we actually have a generation lock, a 50-year patent that was issued in 1976 for an omnidirectional shrouded circular rotor. And we were able to accelerate through 600 RPMs, which most of the vertical axis machines can't get over 100. And there's a static point at 150 RPMs. So that's something that I worked on coming out of college, coming out of thinking about, since the early 1960s, thinking about sailing, thinking about solar and wind, and more so wind because I grew up learning how to sail. I was sailing when I was 7 years of age. My father owned some beautiful boats and helped to sponsor a number of different sailing programs. So as a little kid, I understood the net primary productivity almost naturally of the earth. I learned how to sail, and I learned that you didn't need a mechanical engine to drive you. If you had time and the wind died out, you anchored and waited, and within a few hours the wind was back up again, or the tide had changed or whatever, and you could do what you wanted to do. This country was built on the back of sailing ships.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and also I know you've been a peace activist for a long time too.
Yeah, I've been a friend since the early 1990s, and I was involved as a peace activist in the Vietnam conflict. As a full disclaimer, I have never been in the service. I did go through the lottery, and I was 360 in the lottery. I was very lucky, and my town went up to 350. in state of Connecticut. Yeah, so that was a trip, kind of a nail biter, but I didn't have to go. I lost some dear friends, and I've had some friends that have been scarred for life, and I was able to save one guy from getting drafted. So I felt that was a plus.
Good. Okay, and you mentioned some other things you've been working on.
Right now I'm working, I work with a financial network where I help individuals decide about the future of their investments and try to steer them towards things that are both socially responsible and are good at the same time. Well, I mean, it's the same thing, but that are green, environmental, and that are socially responsible. Looking for those people who can do well while they do good. So it's an important concept for me, and it's been something that I've been doing most of my life.
I don't know if you had a chance to hear some of my opening remarks, but one of the things that I mentioned.
Nick helped you get the phone number. Thanks.
I wanted to bring to the attention of my listeners that there was a wonderful interview with Michael Moore on Link TV the other day, and he pointed out something that I think that many of us, we're in the trenches, we have our challenges, we have the battles that we've chosen, we're trying to work the system, trying to make people aware of things, and he made a point that with so many of the challenges in the past, whether it be desegregation or the Vietnam War or torture or so many important issues to progressives and that speak to our values, one of the good things about the current Occupy challenge is that this time the massive American middle is with us. We don't have to convince them. And he took a great deal of solace from that. And I think it's a good point. We don't have to convince them of this. They see this. It's in their face every day. And that should make part of our work a little easier. Granted, it's hard to lift up when the yoke is on and the foot is pressed on our necks, but I think it's an important point and something we should take to heart. I was wondering if you could address a couple of other things that are on our plate right now. You know, we've got another one of the security system whistleblowers has been indicted by the Obama administration. What's your take on this? You know, some of us, you know, had some skepticism about President Obama from the start, and he certainly fulfilled those concerns. But do you think this is continue? Do you think is there any chance we can turn this guy around on some of this stuff?
It's a, you know, I was going to defer and say, you know, as a member of the past member and, you know, future member of the DEC, that I would keep my mouth shut on that particular score. But I have to agree that the arc of social justice has certainly not been supported as we would have liked to have seen it supported by this administration. I think the president, in all fairness, has his eye on history and has his eye on the fact that he is the first black man who has obtained the highest office in the United States. And his legacy and his helping other folks of color make it into that arena, I think is as important to him as anything else, but I think it gets in his way. And I think there were comments by the Reverend Jackson. There were comments by the Reverend Sharpton. There have been comments by his own pastor, Reverend Wright, about that kind of Uncle Tom behavior. Certainly, it's not as egregious as it is in an Alan West, obviously. But and hopefully Patrick Murphy, just a little political aside here, hopefully Patrick Murphy will do well. And those of you in the Democratic Party who received those cards to put him on the ballot, please get on to that and do that.
I understand he did get the sufficient number of signatures.
Super. That's great. And I'll be working for him. Will I be speaking for the president? I think the president speaks for himself. I don't think I need to elucidate on that. I would say that I'm in agreement that there are many things that I've seen, especially as an environmentalist, that give me great pause. They gave me great pause before I switched from a different Democratic candidate in 2008 to President Obama, because of his apparent lack of comprehension as to what the real problem was, thinking that it could still be solved by the fossil industry that's so entrenched at this point in time. But we, as progressives, need to take the utilities away from that fear that the fossil boys will cut them off and won't give them, you know, the juice to make their money. There can be a decoupling of that particular scenario. The president has not gone down that road. It's a fairly easy road to go down. I'm surprised that he hasn't, and I write him at least once a month about it. And that's the great thing about his administration. You can reach people in the administration if you're enough internet savvy to go to the various websites and sign up, and you know, be respectful. Don't call him names, but you can make your point. And I think the other thing the president does, which he might want to drop, is not worry about being perceived as an angry black man, but to get pissed. It's time to get pissed. There are terrible things going on in this country, the crazy crackers in Orlando and the Trayvon Martin piece. I mean, that is such a disgrace. And as an international, as a Quaker, as a friend, as somebody who travels internationally, I spend at least a day of my first trip trying to assuage the anger that I run into from intelligent Europeans, Africans, Asians, South Americans, who are just out of their mind over what they see as a cop-out by our president.
Well, maybe going to less gray territory, let's move over to the Keystone Pipeline project.
Well, I think, as you know, I was asked by the Obama administration to support natural gas in late 2008, early 2009. I was asked as an environmentalist by a not-to-be-mentioned operative in the state to begin to write particular articles for a number of newspapers. I refused to do that because I cannot abide by using fossil as the only criteria for clean energy. I just find it totally anathema. Yes, he will sign the Keystone Pipeline. Yes, the Keystone Pipeline will be built. We pushed him not to do anything about it until after the election, but you can see that he's decided not to really sign that particular bill. But he's done enough damage with other pipelines that are alternate routes to connect to whatever little piece of the Keystone they decide to change, if they even decide to change any of it. But it most likely will be built, and it's a death knell for Canada in terms of the environment, and it's a death knell for us and the rest of the world. It is the most dirty form of energy conceivable, next to nuclear. I mean, I think nuke is the – I can't – you know, nuke – just don't get me going on nuke, because we'll be here all night.
Yeah, I typically do a segment each week on the latest news from Fukushima, and, yeah, of course, the radiation's being found further and further out in the ocean, and yes, all that. It's pretty critical stuff. Let me ask you to weigh in on one more statement as we wind up toward the end of your joining us, and because we expect Representative Pafford here at 7:30.
Right.
Let me ask you about what is certainly a moneymaker for a former Colonel West. His charge that that he has a list.
Put me at the top of it, you know, and I'll go up and debate him, and I'll call him exactly what I would call him to his face.
I understand he's also against the Enlightenment, and he opposes the sale of Alaska from Russia.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think the singular thing about Alan West is to remember that, you know, he was fond of discharging his .45 2 inches away from somebody's ear, you know, in Iraq. You know, I mean, he was basically drummed out of it, or, you know, pushed out of the military because of his behavior.
Is that to speak inarticulately and carry a loud gun?
There you go. There you go. And that should be on evidence for everybody. I mean, I don't think anybody has to bash Alan West. Just let him open his mouth. You know, I mean, and he's certainly come in. You know, they kicked him out of West Palm, you know, and here he's, you know, we got him now. So
carpetbagger.
I suspect, you know, it'll be an uphill slog. I know a lot of the folks on the island here who, you know, are pretty staunch Republicans who, you know, are shaking their head over Alan West. So I think Pat Murphy can do pretty well. I'm hopeful in that regard. I just want to leave you with one last thought about nuclear.
Sure. Thank you.
In 1955, this is a great line to use. You can check it out on the web. You can even probably find the video. 1955, Oppenheimer, Einstein, and somebody else. Were on a panel. This is before Einstein died, and he wanted to get out and say it. They were very worried, very concerned, and thought that the peaceful nuke situation that Eisenhower had designed, or that the military had designed for Eisenhower in order to have enough weapons-grade material to, you know, recentrifuge after it was used in public utilities. They recentrifuge it and use it for weapons-grade. That's the reason why they developed that nuclear program in the beginning. But what they said was unintended consequences were what they knew that man could not protect himself or the environment over. And that's come to pass.
Yep. Well, thank you so much, Jack.
Unintended consequences have come to pass. Thanks, Rick, and thanks, everybody, and love to do it again sometime.
Oh, love to have you back real soon, buddy. Thanks again.
All right.
That was Jack Braden, wonderful environmental activist, Quaker peace activist, a friend of the show. Thank you again, Jack. Before I bring on our next guest, I do want to mention that Palm Beach County Now has a meeting tomorrow, an election. It's at Compass at 6:30 tomorrow. And don't forget, all members will vote. And if you've been a member for 6 months or more, you can run for office. Thanks again to Jack. And now I'd like to bring on my next guest. Representative Pafford, sir, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Very good, sir, very good. I want to thank you so much for joining us once again.
My pleasure. Always. I had an eventful afternoon. I actually spoke at the Tea Party in Wellington today.
Good for you.
And so, well, you know, I got to tell you, this interview was at the end of my day, and I was hoping if all hell broke loose with the Tea Party, this would make me feel better. So I'm delighted to be with you. Hell didn't break loose at the Tea Party, although sudden silence when I myself as a progressive Democrat kind of made me laugh a little bit. But it feels good to be on the phone with you.
Well, great, great. You know, we're so thrilled with all the work that you've been doing. It's rare that we can say we have an elected official who really has the heart of the people in mind. And, sir, you have shown us again and again and again where your heart is, and we want to thank you for that. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about anything you want to talk about, but, of course, I do want to focus on that you joining the suit.
Well, you know, it was a pretty easy decision for me, and it sounds like you were talking a little bit about that before I got on the line. The suit specifically challenging these prices that are being charged for nuclear facilities that may not be built. That's exactly what we're talking about, correct?
That's exactly it, sir. You know,
yes.
So many of us have concerns. Some of them, you know, very fact-based about how nuclear science is being done. Now, science is a good thing, but sometimes corporate science only looks at the data they want to look at, and that's the kind of science that's not going to do anybody any good. So why don't you go ahead and give us the lay of the land and tell us how you're working on this.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, I joined basically the friend of the court brief with Representative Vaslinda in Tallahassee and Fasano. I'm actually lost on the fourth person to join the suit, but it's very bipartisan. And what we've told the court is, look, you know, the legislature didn't provide a tremendous amount of guidance to the Public Service Commission. They've permitted these large utilities like FPL. To begin and collecting fees, basically, for these future nuclear sites and facilities. And there's been no definition in terms of what they will be. There's been no decision as to, you know, if anything will actually be built. Over $1 billion could be collected, over $1 billion. There's no return on the investment if somebody changes their mind. But I think the bigger issue for me is, you know, all these dollars that are going towards the nuclear type of, and I'm using, sitting in my front lawn, quotation signs, resolution of, you know, alternative energy. This could actually be going to different types of energy research, whether it be wind or solar. You know, we're allowing these dollars to basically be collected by folks that aren't doing anything new and not investing in the types of alternative energies that I think we need to quickly begin going in the direction of. And so, you know, I think we're hopeful that the courts will have a problem. Interestingly enough, I'm wondering now where the Tea Party because it certainly is collecting taxes without any end result. Everybody's very happy with that.
You know, it just seems to me that it's so curious that here, you know, we find Republicans who like to have themselves regarded as a fiscal responsible party. I think there's a lot of businesses that would love to have a kind of plan from the government that they can collect and collect and collect and collect and maybe deliver and maybe not deliver. That sounds like a government handout to me.
Well, you know, God forbid we use the term corporate welfare. It's not used very much up there. And, you know, I've seen somebody, Representative Jenny, who will be leaving the legislature, I believe used it during a committee meeting, and the chair practically came undone because that language was used. But that's what it is. And look, you know, it's no surprise. We have a legislature.
Good thing you didn't say uterus.
No, God, no. We learned a lesson there. We have a legislature that loves giving gifts away. And you know, it's no shock. Anybody listening knows what the legislature is about. We basically pass a $70 billion budget in less than 60 days. And the legislation we pass, it's geared to gift giving. And let me explain a little bit more about that as a motorcycle goes by me in my front yard. You know, we can actually go back to 2005 and Stand Your Ground.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, by that I'm rather shocked they supported it, you know, and good Democrats, supposedly. These laws are basically, they come out of thin air. And in that particular instance, you know, we needed to satisfy and give something to the NRA. And during that year, we came up with a Stand Your Ground law. I wasn't there, but only 20 people voted against this law on the House floor, in the House. The Senate was unanimous. And, you know, what that suggests is we developed laws that really there is no meaning, there is no reason to develop some of these laws. There's no thought, there's no debate. We just come up with language that continues to make a particular donor to a particular campaign happy. In this case, it's the NRA. And we do it year after year after year. You do have people that send up the warnings when we're about ready to pass these things, but eventually when they become law, sadly, in the case of you know, Trayvon Martin, you know, somebody died. You know, and these instances were clearly discussed on the House floor when that bill was passed, that something like that would happen. But there is no care. I mean, this, you know, we have a institution in Tallahassee that is completely governed by cash as opposed to real reason or discussion or, you know, some other motivation. And that is a very, very dangerous way to run a government. And it's so often these type of things occur, you wonder, you know, what else is going to happen. This year, you know, the gift to the NRA was reducing the concealed weapons fees by $5. And when I questioned the bill sponsor on the floor, and asked, are we reducing any fees anywhere else in the budget? And why are we doing that? The answer was no. But they weren't entirely sure. And I said, well, so we're reducing the fees. Why are we reducing the fees if we're hurting for money? And the reason was the trust fund that these dollars went into from the purchase of these concealed weapons, it was making too much money, which is something you don't ever hear in Tallahassee. And because it was making too much money, we could reduce those costs to, you know, get the concealed weapons permit. So I asked the next question. I said, look, in your own bill analysis, it says there's going to be a potential spike in sales of concealed weapons. Is that a concern to you? The bill sponsor had no idea that was even in the bill analysis. And so what I'm not even suggesting, what I'm telling you, is you have bill sponsors who have no clue what's in their own language. You have bill sponsors who take drafts from lobbyists, and we saw it in the case of Representative Bergen, who actually filed a bill with the name Alec in the language. It is disgusting. It is sloppy what's being done in Tallahassee, all to keep power and ensure that these big dollars influence who we are as a state. And you know, that's one reason I'm happy to be a progressive Democrat.
Well, let me ask you a question, and I think it's only slightly off topic, but
okay.
It boils down to this. You know, we see example after example, egregious example, that you just mentioned, where Alec, the name of the authoring agency was left on it. There was no attempt to create the illusion that this came from an actual legislator. Is there no part of the legislative oath that says that they have to do due diligence, that responsibility must be taken, that a bill that's unread, that a bill that's insufficiently analyzed, that a bill that's presented de novo from the hands of a lobbyist still dripping wet, is there nothing that says this is legislative malpractice?
No, there's nothing. And, you know, I think that's a fantastic question. I think each legislator, you know, works independently of one another. I think each has their own standard. And, you know, if you, you know, just go back 36 months and 3 years with some of the legislation we've seen, whether it be, you know, raids on pensions, the election suppression that we've seen, you know, all of these bills, I'm going to submit to you. I am very doubtful any of those bills were written by the bill sponsor. You know, they were provided to the bill sponsor to file as a plan to begin controlling in a uniform manner as many states that we can control. You know, and boy, it's a really good question. Perhaps it is good that we have to run for every 2 years in the House. The problem is, of course, is, you know, the dollars that steer public perception about a legislator. I think if you talk to most people now, heck, the people in the Tea Party, you know, when I mentioned this today, I said, look, you're mad. People are not angry. I am angry. The reason this show is to begin to what's going on, yet, when it'll be some odd percent of incumbents win. And that's because people don't take the time to do their own due diligence. Not that I'm kind of transferring the argument, but, you know, I challenge people all the time when I'm talking to them. Don't listen to what I'm saying. Don't, you know, think it's cute to pick up a baby or shake a hand. You know, when and only when a voter gets the issue, they dig down. It's not a superficial you know, mailing that comes in somebody's mailbox at home saying, you know, this legislator so-and-so is doing a great job, or they're not. Really need. At the end of the day, we could be the nicest person in the world, but we could vote against you every single chance we get. And if, you know, I again tell people all the time, don't support people that, you know, you like voting wrong. Yeah, you know, that's bottom line. Do your research. So much time to do it. It's so easy to find out how we vote. Everybody should vote and know and provide feedback to every legislator.
Your reception's getting kind of bad. If you can do something to get a better connection, that'd be good, because right now you're fading in and out quite a bit.
Okay, well, we'll try this. Is that a little better?
Yes, it is. Let me ask you one more thing.
I'm standing in the street, by the way. That should work now. Well, AT&T
be careful.
What I vote against them.
I was just going to say, you know, granted, with a more informed, more participating public, we might have them elect a better quality of legislator. But I'm thinking, you know, these so many of these Tea Party types or conservative types would have you believe that they're a conservative because they're for first principles, because they're for fiscal responsibility. And yet we see over and over again that they're gutting public services, that they're removing minimum health care. They're trying to stand in the way of any kind of health care. They're reducing funding for education and libraries. It just stands to reason that the result of those kind of stands and those kind of public policies is going to result in a less informed electorate, and unfortunately, we're all going to suffer from that.
A coincidence.
I guess one of the things I'm asking, and I've asked a couple people in office this, beyond the oath of office that says you're not going to subvert the Constitution, is there no component of a legislator's responsibilities that say, you know, you have to work for the public interest, not for corporate interests?
None whatsoever. And you know, that's the tragedy in everything that's legislation right now. I think is the neighbor that's closest to people. And probably just as far from anybody else at this point. You easily say that most members have staff. We have electronic communication, a lot of members don't even go into their office locally. A lot of members completely depend upon what staff says when a bill comes to them on a committee. There's no requirement whatsoever that we dig down. And in fact, I would go further. There's no requirement that we show up in our district. Unless we're invited to something friendly, and that's the tragedy. I think the influence of the dollars, the campaign dollars, we can contribute to sitting behind a desk. It's almost like the type of modern warfare we have. We can destroy entire cities from an aircraft carrier by instructing a few drones to drop a few bombs. In essence, that's what we're doing if the policies are bad. We don't necessarily understand or ever witness what occurs when we say yes and pass the bill. And I sometimes am completely astonished when I tell people, look, the effect of something simple. We'll use the tax collector as an example. My birthday was a few days ago. My wife's birthday is the 17th. I got back from Tallahassee. She calls. She says, are you downtown? Go downtown and get our registration stamps. I went downtown, and there was a huge line. And I was rather shocked that the line was so long. And sure enough, I had to wait for quite some time, and then I realized that they were also doing driver's licenses now, along with vehicle registration. And it dawned on me, that was part of the 60-day budget discussion we had a few years ago, where we collapsed, so I sent a text to the tax collector, I know Ann Cannon, and I said, I'm not happy, I'm in line, and I'd like to know if this is your fault or our fault. And I got one word, yours. The policies that we're producing are coming home to root. And, we're going to continue to see now things that you can't just kind of slough off and tell somebody else to do. Blasting and destroying major components of what used to be a great society, and we're just hoping somebody does it for us, all in the name of no taxes, all in the name of job creation, all in the name of the free market, and frankly, BS. We've seen it with everything from home insurance, where they keep saying, it's going to go down, the market's going to contain, make things better and cheaper for the average home policy, but that continues to go up. And can you do it with a straight face? Because, Bill Adams, every 2 years, every 4 years, if you're a senator, keep getting elected. I blame because they're not showing up in mass. Or, the leaders who no problem. My neighbor just stopped. Hi. Bye. I'm sorry, I'm literally the street. Real issues, and we're not paying attention to the details. And when you've got leaders out there, elected officials, Democrats, basically supporting lousy leaders, larger offices, whether they be for governor or state senator, it's a horrible example for the average voter. We've got a complete disconnect even within the Democratic Party. And we are more voters in that way, too.
Let me ask you a budget-related question. When right now we're anticipating, some people would even say preparing, to host the Republican National Convention. Now, once upon a time, Republicans stood for valid, in my mind, conservative ideals, and now they're hostage to some very powerful corporate forces. There's going to be a lot of costs related to this. Now, has our legislature set aside additional funds? I know we're both fighting the federal government to keep things polluted, and we're fighting the Fifth and Sixth Amendment that we're trying to make the gerrymandering in a better situation. Are the Florida taxpayers going to be faced with a big bill for this Republican convention?
They are. $250,000, I think, is the number for security and things around the Tampa event. I can't say it's necessarily a bad thing. You get $1 million that we're giving away to sports franchises and that type of entertainment. a little bit. Certainly with elections, those type of things, there is a look, it is the Republican convention. I would assume we would provide $10 for the Democratic convention. I say I assume now that I'm actually thinking about it. I'm not entirely sure, but I'd like to think so. There is a cost, and you're right. It reminds me of the Tea Party today. If I'm standing there getting ready to go, looking at this building that was constructed by Palm Beach County with a lot of funds in Wellington, from people. So I think, everybody's sitting there on the lawn. They are on a government road. They use the sidewalk to walk in. They are sitting at what is a taxpayer project. Don't use our money in this way. I didn't bring up, frankly, I didn't want to off right.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about the nuclear power plant. One other question I was going to ask, do you anticipate any discussion of the fallout in more ways than one from Fukushima as part of this discussion of this interesting bailout, pre-funded taxpayer ripoff.
Not really. Look, the last thing Tallahassee thinks. There's very, very little pressure. There's a little motivation to actually talk about things. And I just don't see it. It's not necessarily to say there aren't people that can handle that level of detail. But there's no effort to basically coordinate a discussion like that. I don't see it at all. I think, as you alluded to a few minutes ago, we're fighting the federal government to keep our water. Nobody knows talk about these. And I just don't see it.
Well, sir, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. And believe me, you have a lot of supporters out here. I hope you have a good night and get some rest.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it speaks to what kind of man you are, what kind of public servant that you are, that you would go to a tea party. I'd be willing to bet it'll be a dark day in heck before Colonel West would show up at a progressive meeting.
You know, I got to tell you, it was a little nerve-wracking, but very comfortable, you know, with the notion that, you know, I would be outnumbered. And I was a progressive Democrat. Silence was a bit easy, but, you know, people clapped, and look, at least I've connected. And technically, you know, the organizers were very warm. I do think there are people in that movement that want to have the
well, I mean,
but unfortunately,
you know, if you look at the history of this republic, Lincoln and Douglas were prepared to have a full-out multiple-hour discussion, and there were passions were as high then as they are today, and I think it speaks volumes about what kind of patriot you are that you would speak to clearly an unfriendly audience at best.
I made it out smiling. We got video, so it's on Facebook. I think I might even look a little nervous, but I think it all came out okay. Hey, thank you very much. And one other thing, I've been walking in the street pacing back and forth to get to be hit by a car. So I'm ready to do the show whenever you are again, and I know exactly where the reception's going to be perfect.
Well, thanks again, and thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
Have
a good night.
Pleasure. Have a great night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Another fantastic appearance by our good friend and representative, Mark Pafford, who's clearly doing good work. Friends, put your money where your mouth is. These are the kind of progressive government officials, the kind of public servants that we want to see continuing in government. Make sure you find a way to support this kind of Democrat, this kind of progressive man. He is doing the work of the public, watching out for you and me in clearly a very unfriendly, inhospitable environment in Tallahassee. I do want to mention again that tomorrow, April 16th, Palm Beach County Now is having a meeting at Compass at 6:30. All members can vote. It's going to be a pizza party, if I'm not mistaken. And anybody who's been a member for 6 months more can run for office. So make sure you support the good people at Palm Beach County Now. A couple last thoughts I want to share with you. you know, I had a wonderful discussion with some progressive activists the other day, and we were talking about what's going to be happening in Tampa this summer with the Republican convention. And Occupy is working with the government to try to make this a good, important, constitutionally valid experience for everyone, to make sure that there is a space for protest, the right of American citizens to petition the government for redress of grievances, to speak out, must be observed, and let's make sure that we support those who want to raise their voices. Something else has been happening, I've seen it a bit, and you know, when you've got people like Rush Limbaugh and Beck and that kind of mentality, who spew their hate speech, I know there's some people from our side of the fence who want to shut them down, who want to shut them off, who want to drive them from the air. I just want you to know that's not my values. I think that all points of view are important. I frankly would rather have that stupid idiot talking on the air so that people can know just how lame their thoughts are. And I think the marketplace of ideas is an important place. And I can't, as a progressive activist, as a writer, as an author, and as a public speaker, want to see someone's voice silenced. So don't silence their voices. Speak up yourselves. Speak up and let the good words come out. There are good people doing good work every day. That's what kind of people you are. That's why you tuned in. So I want to thank you, my friends, from myself and Mickey Royce, my co-producer. I want to thank you for joining us, because we are here doing the good work every week. Next week, Katie Schmidt, congressional candidate, and also Fran Sachs of EMMA. Make sure you tune in. I'm Rick Spezak, your host, news director of Progressive News Network. And on behalf of myself and my co-producer, Mickey Royce, I want to thank you for joining us. Have a very good night. Thank you.